of course, Haiti is on everyone's mind this week. My guest is someone who the first thing on her mind is often Haiti. Laura Flynn is editor of the book Eyes of the Heart by President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. She is also co-author of the pamphlet We Will Not Forget about the accomplishments of the Lavalas government in Haiti. Born and raised in San Francisco, she lived in Haiti for 5 years. She is a founder of the Haiti Action Committee here in the Bay Area and the Haiti Accompaniment Project, and a former director of international relations for the Aristide Foundation for Democracy in Haiti. Laura, thanks for being with us on Women's Magazine.
Thanks. It's great to be with you today.
You know, I think a lot of us have been just really overwhelmed by the images coming out of Haiti and by the sort of nonstop media coverage of the devastation. At the same time, I'm sure that the coverage leaves out a lot.
Well, I think actually I just want to say a couple of things about some of the positive things that are going on right now in Haiti. I've had to stop watching CNN because I just can't take it anymore. And for the first 2 days, I did watch along with everyone else because I wasn't able to reach anyone in Haiti. And, you know, that vision is not accurate. That reflects a kind of scene of total dependency. There's all this focus on violence or looting or even just the fear of violence and looting. Now, I have been in touch with people at the foundation in Haiti, and, you know, their stories are of people helping each other, really at dramatic risk to their own lives, of people coming together, creating organizations right on the ground, trying to figure out how to shelter, how to take care of each other physically and mentally. And the foundation is an amazing example of that. It's a large complex in Tabar, and it wasn't very damaged, only minor damage after the earthquake. And we got first messages from them yesterday morning saying they had 10,000 people sheltering there, many of whom needed medical treatment. There's a group of Cuban doctors who had been working with the foundation to do mobile clinics around the country for the past few years. They were there on site, along with 45 Haitian doctors, young Haitian doctors who had originally begun their training at the foundation's medical school, and then that training was ended when the coup hit in 2004. The medical school has been closed since then because, first, the United States government took it over as a military base, and second, the government no longer funded the school. But those students did get their medical training in Cuba, and they're back in Haiti now, and 45 of them showed up at the foundation to participate and to give medical care to the thousands of people who were seeking refuge and care at the foundation. So I spent most of yesterday they had completely run out of medical supplies, and they were low on water and food, and I spent most of yesterday, you know, trying to help them access some of that. Some things are easier from outside the country because it is total chaos there. Things today seem a lot better. We're working with Partners in Health, who's decided to set up a base right there at the foundation with us. And, you know, they're seeing this is going to be a long-term situation. There's a huge number of people, and I would expect that more will come once they hear that the foundation has, you know, food, water, and medical care. The international aid, you know, there's a lot in it that is positive and inspiring. It's also a lot of chaos, but it's certainly not the only story, and I think the story of how Haitians are responding from the ground and taking care of each other is, to me, the most inspiring.
I think one of the things that is very confusing to a lot of us who are watching, you know, who don't have much knowledge about the country, are the stories of how international aid is coming into the country but somehow not getting to the people that need it. As of yesterday, the UN said that they had only fed 8,000 people out of all of the people who are starving. Why isn't the aid being able to get to the people?
The logistical situation is incredibly difficult. The mass of people who need food and water are in the city. The foundation, we're only about a mile from the airport, so it's actually very easy for stuff to get. Well, we were having trouble getting stuff, but we are really close, so it shouldn't be hard once we can open those lines up. So first, there's an incredible backlog of planes at the airport. The port is not working. Beyond that, most of the roads into the city are a mess. And then beyond that, you know, for instance, the government itself is almost completely unfunctional at this point. And, you know, there may be a lack of leadership and some problems, but at the same time, nearly every government building collapsed in downtown Port-au-Prince. And there's incredible loss of life among the government. They have no communication system. Supposedly, the U.S. was going to be providing them with some better communications. There, you know, there still are no phone lines operating. Roads aren't operating. There's no water. You know, the radios aren't operating. It's not like anybody can hear a national message or anything, and there's no electricity. The entire southern half of the city, all cinder block houses, and they're saying 80 to 90% of it is destroyed. So I don't even know how you can get vehicles in there at all, which is also part of the reason why the whole southern half of the country is cut off. So there are some real problems. I also, in addition to all of that, I would say I do think there's an underlying fear pervading and growing in the aid community of the Haitian people, you know, that there's going to be violence, or if they try to distribute food, there'll be, you know, riots and chaos. And I think that's really unhelpful. That hasn't been, there's been very little looting, there's been very little violence, and it seems to me the longer they wait, the worse the risk of that is in any case. I mean, that will happen if they wait. And I think Haitians themselves are probably going to have to step up and figure out ways to organize themselves to distribute the food, you know, so that sort of calm the fears of the international community, in a sense.
The women's organization Madre, which is functioning in Haiti, which has been functioning in Haiti for a long time, says on their website that women are the hardest hit in disasters. Can you comment on that and also talk a little about the role of women's organizations in Haitian civil society?
Yeah, I guess I would just say women and children are the hardest hit. Haiti's population is almost 50% under it is 50% under the age of 15. So, but women's organizations are the backbone of the popular movement in Haiti, and they're the backbone of the Lavalas movement as well. And I think they are going to continue to play a key role in sort of figuring out how do we set up community kitchens all around Port-au-Prince to feed people. I mean, I was thinking about this morning, and I was thinking, like, okay, they have to find a way to work with the popular organizations to turn this into a series of community kitchens around Port-au-Prince rather than a refugee camp. I mean, they have said 3 million people directly affected by the earthquake, massive numbers of homeless people. It's almost like a huge refugee camp, but somehow within that, in order for Haitians to regain dignity, they sort of have to play a role in this. And I think if that's the part, that's the key part of it that I am not confident the international aid community is going to get or respond to.
One of the things that we've already seen is the U.S. government taking this moment to bring in a lot more troops. An article in the New York Times on Saturday suggested that the U.S. government is actually slowing the relief effort by prioritizing getting troops in and American citizens out. But at the same time, the media in general is promoting the idea that it's the U.S. and, to a lesser extent, UN troops who are going to bring rescue and stability to an unfunctioning, what they continuously refer to as a non-functioning Haitian government. Mm-hmm. So can you talk some about the role that the U.S. and the U.N. have played in setting up this situation?
Well, I mean, in terms of, yeah, I think that points exactly to it. That fear of the population is driving them to believe that they can only deliver the humanitarian aid at the point of a gun. I mean, essentially, that's what they're saying. I think they are not going to deliver much until they have troops there to do it with. And that is a pretty horrifying notion, because the UN troops in Haiti have been seen as an occupation force since 2004. They've played a role, you know, in some ways, yes, they have sometimes provided police services that were helpful, and they've played a stabilizing role in certain aspects. But to the poorest neighborhoods and the poorest people in Port-au-Prince, it's been an impressive force. They have specifically tried to violently pacify the poorest neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince, the ones who most strongly resisted the coup in 2004. So they're not popular already, and more U.S. troops, you know, it is very difficult, though, at this moment to be completely critical, because on the other hand, the United States Army is probably the only one who can purify enough water to provide water to people in the city, and so I think we have to sort of think carefully about the needs, and at the same time, what we don't want is a long-term occupation. The kinds of troops they send are also kind of important. I mean, how much are engineers? How much are riot control? You know, that's a big question. And you know, also, again, to the extent that they would reinforce the Haitian government, weak as it is, to try to find ways to transfer power over them as quickly as possible.
As perhaps a piece of that, I understand that President Aristide has made a statement saying that he wants to return to Haiti to help bring the country back.
Yeah, I'll just say a little bit more. He had a press conference in Johannesburg, where he is living right now. He went out, he held it right near the airport, and he said he was ready to go immediately. And essentially, he had done everything on his side to prepare and to be able to go. And, you know, it was kind of up to the authorities on the other end to either accept that or not. Or, you know, or, I mean, essentially, is the United States government or the government of Haiti going to stand in his way of returning?
And what do you think is the answer to that?
Well, we were hopeful after the change in administration that the possibility for him to return would become real. So that's the first thing. That seemed like time had passed. We had a new administration here in the United States. And I honestly have to say, I think in many ways that the Perfal administration in Haiti was as much a block to that as the U.S. government. I think that Perfal has no interest in having Aristide return. And there was even the Provisional Electoral Council excluded Aristide's political party, Femi-Lavalas, from the upcoming elections, which I assume now are not going to be held. They were supposed to be in February. It actually excluded 12 parties, including President Aristide's party. The Haitian people need hope. They need some sense that they're going to get through this. And I think Aristide, he is a symbol of hope for the Haitian people. And so particularly if there is an international campaign pushing this idea forward, or sort of if we put this out in the press.
So everybody wants to help. Even prisoners in New York, I'm told, have donated some of their commissary money to Haiti, and people in Gaza who are starving insisted that some of the aid money that had been raised for them go to Haiti.
The government of Rwanda is sending aid as well.
Wow.
Among many others, obviously.
What would you recommend that people do who want to help?
People who want to help out financially. Okay, my number one recommendation, and this is really for people, you know, progressives, people who want to do something that the general public isn't going to do, is to give money to the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund of the Haiti Action Committee. And the reason for that is because they very specifically are going to target these funds to grassroots organizations all over the city and beyond, if there's need, to rebuild. There are tons of other good organizations. If you want half the money to go to overhead, give to the Red Cross. Partners in Health is doing excellent work. But I also know that they're a lot more visible. So if you really want to do something, you know, where your small amount of money is going to have a more direct impact, then I would highly recommend the Emergency Relief Fund of the Haiti Action Committee. They have a long history and deep ties with community organizations, and that people can give there on the website at haitiaction.net.
And we will put that link, as well as some others, on our website, which is kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com. People should also know that tonight, Monday at 5 p.m., there will be a vigil at the Oakland Federal Building. This is called in by the Haiti Action Committee in conjunction with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who will be attending. So we urge people to do that. Once again, that's 5 p.m. tonight, Monday, at the Oakland Federal Building. You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. I was talking with Laura Flynn, author of the memoir Swallow the Ocean, as well as the editor of the book Eyes of the Heart by former President Aristide of Haiti. Laura is also former international policy director of the Aristide Foundation for Democracy.